On this special edition of Route 51, we learn about an initiative launched this past year within Western Wisconsin's Hmong community that's resulted in a series of podcasts produced by Hmong youth to share their stories and those of their elders. WPR reporter Hope Kerwin first produced this program for WPR's La Crosse-based regional talk show, Newsmakers.
Is never easy, but for kids of color, there can be even more challenges, from dealing with racist remarks from their classmates to societal pressures to drop their culture in order to fit into the mainstream. A group of Hmong American high school students from La Crosse and Holman are hoping to help other students navigate these issues and even work to change them through a new podcast called Hmong Bays. Wisconsin Public Radio has been helping these students produce their new show, and joining us now to talk about the program is Shising Pongyu Moa, Social Justice Director for Diashia Incorporated, a Hmong cultural agency in La Crosse that started Hmong Bays. So, obviously the name plays off of the slang word bay, or before anyone else, if people aren't familiar, but I wonder if you could explain what it stands for in this case.
So, Hmong Bays, the BAE stands for Building Awareness and Empowerment. So the full title would be Hmong Building Awareness and Empowerment. But we chose to use the acronym because it uses the slang version, and the youngins love that.
So what was the goal behind this podcast project?
The goal was to provide an opportunity for young Hmong people to explore their identity, their social identity, being race or immigrants or immigrant children or gender, to allow them to feel empowered by understanding who they are. And then also to create a platform, or definitely to create media for young Hmong people from across the state and across the country, and those who are interested, who are not Hmong, to learn more about the Hmong experience, especially our young Hmong folks.
Yeah, why do you feel like a podcast was a good format for this project?
Well, one of the main aspects of Hmong culture is that we're in oral tradition. So we do have a written language, but it's just not as heavily used for many reasons, not as heavily used and as important as our oral traditions. So a lot of our storytelling is really important to keeping our culture alive. Our folk tales are very important. And also we thought it'd be more manageable for our young people to create using purely an audio platform, as we are a newer organization and we haven't spent a lot of time creating content as an organization. So we thought we'd choose purely audio and keep a safe distance away from dealing with video too. But we knew that, especially considering our culture, an audio project would educate and build awareness just as well.
I wonder if there are other resources like this or other conversations like this for Hmong American kids in Wisconsin or even beyond that.
I do not know if there are any resources like this. I know there are some Hmong podcasts, but they're definitely not created by or aimed at a younger Hmong audience. So I'm really excited about this podcast and what it means for, firstly, our young people who got to participate in doing it, and then definitely for what it means to our larger Hmong community and everyone else who wants to learn about the young Hmong experience.
Talk a little bit about the students who were involved in creating this podcast. They did all of the interviews and kind of helped guide the direction of the conversation.
There were five boys and three girls involved. Most of them graduated this recent summer and have been participating in Hmong youth programs for several years now. So we were excited to provide this opportunity for them to challenge themselves and to grow and to create an impact with all the education of changing the communities that they've learned in the past.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what each of the episodes focuses on?
We start off with historical trauma. Historical trauma in the Hmong community deals with how large events have impacted communities and how those effects have been passed down through generations. The second is assimilation. So oftentimes immigrants come to the U.S. and have to balance the experiences of being of their immigrant population and of being the mainstream American population. They have to navigate both of those cultures and choose and really determine for themselves how they want to balance those two. The third one is racism, which our young people are Hmong, and they interview a lot of Hmong people, and we're very visibly, physically different from the mainstream Wisconsin population, which is white. So their experiences of being treated differently, negatively mostly, are shared in this episode, and I think it's an important and very real experience. Next is an episode on sexism and gender roles, how our young people are navigating that. We hear from both girls and boys, and they offer really passionate reflections on their experiences, which are different from mainstream conversations of what gender and sexism look like. Because oftentimes we're talking about it in a Hmong context. So that's really important that we had those stories recorded and heard. The last episode is on activism. We covered all these topics, but we didn't want to end off on such a sad note. We wanted to highlight that there's a lot of passionate people in our community trying to make a difference, whether it's small, like just speaking up in their classrooms, like they shared in a lot of the stories that you would hear in that episode, or longer term activism where we have community advocates who have been doing the work for 20 years sharing how and what they've been doing to create positive change in the Hmong community and the larger community.
So I want to hear a little bit from the podcast now, and we're going to hear from the episode on sexism. And you know, before we get to the clip, you mentioned that, you know, this episode on sexism and the impact of gender roles, it's in the context of the Hmong community. But I wonder how, you know, this also might speak to a larger conversation we're seeing right now about discrimination against women, you know, whether that's the hashtag MeToo movement or other conversations about, you know, how women are discriminated against.
Yeah, I think it's really important because it draws a parallel across cultures, which oftentimes is a big dividing wall that two cultures don't really get along and they don't click with each other. You choose one or the other side, right? But I think this is important because it demonstrates that there's gender roles and inequality in both cultures, in mainstream American culture, as we see with the hashtag MeToo movement, which is huge, and definitely with their conversations, it parallels that when they talk about the gender roles that they have in their families, where the girls have to do more chores and the boys do not, they're allowed to stay out later. I think this is great that there's this parallel that they were able to build, and I think that's important for these young people to understand that to understand their identities better, that they can really fit in both cultures and also be critical of who they are at the same time.
I wonder if you could talk about how the male students reacted to this issue.
I would say that there was also a parallel with the experiences for boys, Hmong boys, and boys and men in mainstream American culture too. The parallel being that there was a sort of feeling of dejection, feeling as if they were targets of something that they didn't do. But also, you know, some too, also understanding that there is a clear difference in how genders are treated, and there was that parallel between both cultures. There were men and boys from both cultures that do share and speak out against sexism. So I think that – so again, the parallel between the two allows for young Hmong boys to understand that sexism and gender roles exist in both cultures, but also positive ways to navigate gender roles and sexism really do exist, whether they look in their own communities or whether they look outside of their community.
So let's hear from some of the podcasts now. One of the students who helped create it described her own experience dealing with strict gender roles in her family and how it's hurt some of her relationships. This is Gauchi Vang.
I live with a family that are mostly boys, and like I'm the only girl in the family and the youngest as well. So like, and because like I don't have a female mother figure in my life right now, so like, I don't know. I'm just different. I'm like the odd one out of the family, and I don't know how to connect with my dad because, like, we just argue a lot. And because like I'm a girl, you know, and because he's a guy, and he thinks that he holds the power over me. I always hesitate to talk to him because I'm always scared that there's something that I'm always doing wrong, which I know that deep inside, like, that's not my doing. Like, it's him. Yeah, the things that we argue about a lot is when I'm constantly always going out, or like even if I'm not going out, like I'm doing certain things, but he doesn't know because like me and my dad, we don't really communicate. The things that I do that aren't wrong, but to the Hmong community that they see, they think that is bad as a Hmong daughter. My family, which are men, like they threaten me, like, especially my dad, he threatens me that, like, you know, if I do this and all that and do as I please, like, he won't support me with, like, financial-wise. He won't give me money. He won't do anything. And when I get married, he will not give me anything, like, for, like, a blessing, you know, and all that stuff. And my brothers, like, I guess they don't really threaten me, but, like, they do also make me feel that way. I think the one that really, really makes me sad, you know, and I'm sure that most Hmong women can understand, you know, and like I think it makes me really sad when I come home late, you know, or even if it's just like a random day that I'm home, and I have a lot of guy friends, and I would come home, or you know, and my grandma would always say that Gokuchi Samu Oshino Tini Vidaha Ime Chaku Hato like Mio Chow, you know, Vidaha like and like Tokulai like Mio Chow Chimotu Sa like Yuakua, and you know, and it would really like, and I need to like really do something about it too, because like it's going to bring down the family reputation. It's going to bring down my brother's reputation. It's going to bring down my dad's reputation. And I need to watch myself, you know, because I never know what's going to happen, you know, and, like, men are scary, you know. And she's also being oppressed, but she doesn't understand those things because she's so traditional, you know, so old-fashioned that, like, these are the things that you need to follow, and, like, men are always the ones that they look upon because men are stronger than us, and we always have to follow orders because that's how it is in the Hmong community. And so it's a little hard for me to rely on her because she doesn't understand the things that I go through. I've gotten so sick and tired of having to hold the burden of needing to keep my dad or my brother's reputation up. And I think that's really hard, and I don't think that's my job, you know, because I'm also a human being, and I don't care about reputation. It's however you want to look at my family, go ahead. You know, however you look at me, go ahead, because I'm my own person, you're your own person. You have the right to judge, because a human being judges no matter what, and, you know, and that's normal. And, you know, and I get really tired of hearing reputation over and over, because you know, like, that's not the burden that I need to hold upon myself.
Why do you think we build up sisterhood?
I think that we build sisterhood is because as Hmong women, we don't have that kind of space, because we grew up to learn to be, like, to do things for men. And we don't understand what it's like to have a sister, or like even if we do have a sister, like they're also being oppressed, and that it's not a space for you too, because for me and her, like we would both be like feeling the same way, but we don't know how to connect when we don't have the space, when it's so toxic at home. And we build the sisterhood. The reason why is because we need that space to come together and talk and to connect, and for us to understand that, wow, like this amazing woman here is also going through the same exact thing as I am. You know, we have so much in common, you know, and that's what makes sisterhood so powerful.
So for Gauchi, those gender expectations made her relationship with her family very difficult.
Yeah, and she makes the point that to help Hmong women, we all need to practice sisterhood.
And that's exactly how Gaozhua Va got involved with addressing gender-based violence.
The first time I advocated for a Hmong girl, she was actually running away from home because her parents were so strict. She had been kept as a teen and restricted from going outside because her parents didn't feel that she was being a good Hmong girl and she was being a balai, and they had threatened to cut her hair off. And so I remember being a teen myself, really young, maybe like 18 or 19, and her running to me because at that time I was already in college and had a place to stay. And so she came and she asked for my help, and that was my first time really advocating for her and for her safety. And so it really started when I was young. You know, I mean, I grew up in the 80s. I, you know, came here as a young girl and grew up as a refugee teen here in the U.S. And we had really strict gender roles. My sister and I were to cook, clean, do all the laundry, all the house chores, but I didn't see my brothers doing anything. Many families have changed, but many families are still very traditional. And so I could see many Hmong girls having to do all of the family chores as a means of getting them ready to be good wives or good partners. But that young boys are not taught the same, which has detrimental effects for young adults who do want to become partners with each other, whether they're in the same-sex relationship or whether they're in a queer relationship or a heterosexual relationship. Young boys who are not taught equitable gender roles and responsibilities often have a really tough time in relationships.
That was an excerpt from Hmong Bays, a new podcast created by and for Hmong high school students through Giashia Incorporated. It's a Hmong cultural agency in La Crosse. Emily Vang and Cynthia Shong were hosts of that episode. Today we're talking with Shising Pony Moa, social justice director at Giashia Incorporated, about the new podcast and how the organization hopes to positively impact Hmong youth. I'm Hope Kerwin. All right, so during that clip, we heard from Gaozhua Va. She's an activist and educator who works on gender-based violence and gender justice in the Madison community. And I wonder if you could talk about why it was important to include interviews with experts like her in this podcast.
I think it's incredibly important. I think all types of views do need to be heard, but I think that while breadth is important, depth is also really important, especially if there's over 20 years of experience in the work of fighting gender injustice. I think, and I really respect Gaozhua's work and the knowledge that she has and the movement that she's built.
Hearing from these experts, what do you think that means for the high school students who are involved in this?
I honestly think that what the young people are doing now with their interviews and the discussions and the questions they have, and also for the young people listening to those stories and relating to the stories, I think it's incredibly important to have an expert come in and almost in a way wrap up those thoughts, conclude those thoughts, give strong answers, a strong direction for these young people to take those ideas, those questions they have, which these experts have spent years working on to answer in a really productive and in-depth way.
All of the experts and the normal lay people who are interviewed for this podcast, they are all Hmong. And I just wonder if you could talk about, you know, why it's important to really highlight Hmong voices in the community.
I think considering that mainstream media just mainstream society doesn't have the outlets for marginalized voices to be heard very often at all. I think that the knowledge that marginalized voices can provide is really important to create a better society. And I think giving that opportunity for Hmong people to provide their experiences and the knowledge that they have to the larger community is really important to creating positive, better solutions to solve many of our community's problems.
So these students are wrestling with some pretty heavy stuff here, right? Like everything from sexism and racism to, you know, historical trauma. What was the process like for getting these students ready to have these conversations?
So we spent their fall semester in high school discussing those five topics. We met once a week for about 3 hours. We discussed the five topics: racism, sexism, historical trauma, assimilation, and activism. And we use a myriad of different resources. We did some readings. We watched some videos. We brought in experts to chat with them. And I think one of the most important parts was giving them the time to think through their own experiences as they use these new ideas and tools to think about those experiences that they've had, and sharing and practicing sharing it with each other so they could understand themselves better.
So let's hear from some of the students directly who worked on the podcast doing some of that reflection on their own experiences. So this is from the episode on historical trauma. And you already mentioned that historical trauma is kind of these experiences that have happened in previous generations that are kind of passed down and kind of influence. So this is a conversation that the students had about, you know, the way they see historical trauma has influenced the way that they were raised.
I think my parents right now are gardening in their garden. And just recently we got our floors done at home. But what my parents worried about was the refrigerators downstairs, because we were doing the floors downstairs too. And my mom had me move all the frozen vegetables from one freezer to another. And I bring this up because my dad, like, I seen photos of him back in Laos and Thailand. He was like really scrawny and really like bony. And like, I've seen him now, he's really big, and I was like, okay, you're good. You're not starving anymore.
So having the refrigerators and having all that food stocked up is kind of a reflection of how, you know, during the war, they didn't have enough food.
Yeah.
And so it's like now their response to that is to have all this food ready all the time in case something bad happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, how many of y'all have, like, more than two freezers in your basement, right?
We have two freezers in our basement.
We have four in our garage.
We have three in our basement and one outside.
Yeah. I have, like, a freezer downstairs and a fridge downstairs, and then outside in the garage, I have two freezers and another refrigerator. Yeah.
My family has two refrigerators and two freezers, two big freezers too. And it's funny because we used to have them both downstairs in our basement, both big freezers. But now, over the years, right, we have stopped using it a little more and more. So we don't actually fill it up as much, and we have moved one of the big freezers outside. That freezer is not as full as it used to be from when I remember growing up. And I wonder if that is a manifestation of how things have kind of changed now, or how they have healed. My parents have healed over time, right, to not depend on that freezer as much. There can be a lot of reasons, too.
I have a question. How do you think trauma has affected how your parents have raised you?
Like, where we need to stay in the house. Like, they want to keep us safe, so they kind of lock us in the house. Because yeah. They're so scared that, like, we might get harmed outside.
That's true. That's what happened to me. Well, I grew up and that, you know, you're a kid, you're always curious, you want to go outside all the time, but then your parents are like, no, you got to stay home. They kind of like force you in. You can't really do anything about it, and you stay in, and then you don't really go out to meet like nature, be like a kid. But you know, I still did it anyways. I still snuck out. So. And I also remember because I wanted to play out so much, but then my parents didn't really want me to go outside. Like it was to the point of desperation where like you're so thirsty. Well, you're a kid, you're playing outside, but then you don't want to go home just to get a drink because they'll notice you and then they'll shut you in and then you won't be able to go out. So you'll like, you'll ask your friends, you'll be like, hey, can I go into your house to take a drink? And then if your friends are like the same as, you know, as in the same position, you know, I can't because my parents won't let me back out. And then you'll be like, okay, let's go find some water somewhere else.
That's a conversation about the impacts of historical trauma from the high school students who created Hmong Bays. It's a new podcast created for high school students through Geoshia Incorporated, a Hmong cultural agency in La Crosse. We're here with the organization's social justice director, Shising Ponyu Moa, to talk about the program. I'm Hope Kerwin.
Our discussion about the Hmong Bays podcast project continues in just a minute on this edition of Route 51. The conversation is produced and hosted by WPR's La Crosse-based reporter, Hope Curran.
Today we're talking with Shising Ponyu Moa, social justice director at Geoshia Incorporated, a Hmong cultural agency in La Crosse, about the new podcast Hmong Bays and how the organization hopes to positively impact Hmong youth. So, as you mentioned earlier, you know, part of the goal of this podcast was to, you know, get the students to think about these issues and to reflect on their own experiences. We just heard them talking about historical trauma, but also part of this was to show them, you know, how to make change on some of these issues in the community. You know, can you talk about why that piece is important, talking about activism and the way students can get involved in it?
Yeah, I think there's two things to that. The first is that we discuss so many of these negative issues that really affect and bring down the self-esteem of these young people, right? And I think that I wanted to give them an avenue to discuss how they can make things better and definitely talk to people of how those people have made things better. And then speaking of making things better, the second part is leadership, right? Challenging themselves to think in ways where they can make communities better, but also then having the courage to do so. Hearing stories of other people, young people, or people who have been doing it for a long time, hearing their stories of standing up and making a difference, and hearing their stories of courage, whether it's small or large, you know, one of the stories from our experts is about a small thing they did by just housing someone and how that began their career in changing their communities for the better. And I think stories like that are really important for our young people to hear, that they don't have to be loud and charismatic. They don't have to be somehow – they don't have to be standing in front of 500 people and saying something, but rather they can just be helping one person when they're in the time of need. So I think stories like that and discussions about leadership, what that looks like, all the forms of leadership, I think that's really important – so that they could answer those, so they could find solutions to those issues that they discussed, racism, sexism, assimilation, historical trauma.
But we have seen high school students, young people, really on the forefront of a lot of social movements and really kind of taking the reins on activism. The March for Our Lives movement, you know, we saw the high school students involved in the school shooting in Parkland, you know, come out of that and have led a movement across the country, really. And I just wonder if you feel like activism and making social change, is that more visible? Is that more attainable for high school students today?
Yeah, I think social media is an amazing thing. I think it's really inspired a lot of our young people. One of our very own Hmong Bays, one of the participants in our podcast program, two participants in our podcast program, they organized one of the marches in the area, organized their fellow high school students to walk out of class in solidarity with the March for Our Lives movement. So I think that nationwide young people's movement for change really is apparent, and the young people in our state are a part of it. They know they are, and I think social media is a big reason why, because they can see it happening and they can jump right into the discussion, and after that discussion, they can start planning to make change in their own communities too.
So let's hear from the episode on activism. One of the voices on this episode is Linda Shong, a student at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, who helped lead a series of protests after UWL cut Hmong language classes in 2017.
I feel like I have a good sense of my Hmong identity. I feel like I know what I need to learn to have a better sense of my identity. And I understand that, like, that's something I need to work on. But I do have a good sense of my identity. I think that took me a while. Actually, like, a long while. Like, it wasn't until after high school that I finally, like, oh, your Hmong identity is, like, really important to you, right? And we never, ever, like, learn about ourselves in school. And so I feel like, I don't know, it took me a while, right? But I think that other Hmong students or other Hmong kids can relate to what I went through. Right? K through 12 education, like, we don't ever get a chance to learn about ourselves. And when we're in college, like, there are classes out there. Awesome, great, let's take it, let's do it and learn about ourselves for, like, you know, many of us, it's, like, the first time that we're, like, learning Hmong. Like, we're learning how to speak Hmong. We're learning about our Hmong history. I know how important our Hmong language class is to us. I think, like, I know how important, like, Hmong education, any, like, like how important that is to Hmong students and the development of their own identity, right? And I know that a lot of students seek that, right? We're always looking to learn about ourselves, right? And so in the back of my mind, like, I really thought about all, like, myself included, right, but, like, all the Hmong students coming to the university, all the Hmong students that I work with, right, all the Hmong students that I know, like, not even in college, right, middle school, high school, and having, like, the youth show up, having, like, for all our stuff, like, having youth show up, community members, like, elders, and then other Hmong students, right, I think, like, that was the biggest thing, and I was, like, afraid, right? But, like, after, like, we do everything and we, like, do the rally, we send out emails and stuff like that, I feel good about it, right? I feel good that we did something. I feel good. And then our support, I think with this small group that I work with, I think our support was each other, right? And then also knowing that other Hmong students were on board. And then also knowing that other students of color were on board supporting us, right? Because they also see how important it is for us and the reasons why we're fighting for this. There wasn't a lot of Hmong students who were really wanting to be part of the conversation. And I know, I totally understand, right, that when these things come up, like, it's instinct for us to just sit back. Right? Because what else can we do? We can fight, and at the end of the day, like, what always happens is that our voices are still silenced, right? And so from that, a lot of us, even myself, right, a lot of times, like, we didn't want, no longer wanted to fight because we felt like at the end. So there's all bit watching Malaya. But like, I think it's important to always remind ourselves that we can do it, right? And we should do it.
That was an excerpt from Hmong Bays, a new podcast created by and for Hmong high school students through Giashia Incorporated, a Hmong cultural agency in La Crosse. Today we're talking with Shising Pongyu Moa, social justice director at Giashia, about the new podcast. So what's next for Hmong Bays?
Yeah, so I really hope that Hmong Bays continues forward. I hope that our young people are excited to create more content, to hear more stories, to continue the discussion, the conversations about issues in our community, larger issues across the world, and how to solve them. However, many of them are going off to college, so hopefully they will continue on in college, or they will help foster that excitement with our younger youth so they continue with it too. Having those discussions about our community, they are the catalyst for change in our community.
I wonder if there's a lot of interest from the families of these students, right? Like, how are you hoping that this is going to touch more than just the students who get to hear the podcast?
I'm really hoping that the parents or the older folks are inspired and excited to see young people talking about, articulating about their experiences and their issues and offering solutions, being excited to find solutions for problems in their communities. I want the older Hmong folks to be okay with handing the baton off to them. I want them to see the young people as leaders and taking the steps to inspire leadership with their young people. And just like many other communities, we're a little slow to trust in our young people. And so like in our Hmong community, I really hope that our older folks will give them that chance.
Shising Pongyu Moa, social justice director with Giashia Incorporated, is here with us today to talk about their new podcast created by Hmong youth in the La Crosse area. 5 episodes of Hmong Bays will be published to help high school students address issues like racism and sexism and make a change in their community. And today we're featuring one of the episodes. It focuses on how racism is impacting Hmong American students at local schools and how some students are pushing back.
Welcome to Hmong Bays, building awareness and empowerment through Hmong experiences.
We're bringing you stories from all generations of our Hmong community to talk about social justice issues.
I'm Cao.
And I'm Yiseng. Today we're going to be talking about racism.
He would just jokingly call my friend Jinx because we were Asian.
They chuckled when he said the underage girlfriend.
He said, oh, how conveniently how a Chinese restaurant's next to a pet store.
Have you heard jokes like these before?
Today, we're talking about racism, how Hmong Americans can be targets of racist jokes or stereotypes in their day-to-day lives, and how it's impacting the way they see the community and themselves.
One experience I have being the butt of a racist joke actually involves my physics teacher. I told my friend Yupeng the story. It was during junior year, during my physics class. So in physics, it's easy to draw pictures in order to help students understand problems. And our teacher, he was drawing people in the classroom, right? He was drawing these different students, and then it comes to me. And then he made these stereotypes about Hmong people. We were learning about simple machines, and he was trying to give an example of the inclined plane and how you need a ramp to move stuff up and down easier. And what happened was he drew me driving a blue Honda Civic with the ramp with my underage girlfriend in the car with me, and I got really hurt in the class. The other students didn't say much, but I think he was trying to impress the other students. They chuckled when he said the underage girlfriend, and I got really offended and really quiet afterwards. There were some other Hmong students in the class, but I don't think it affected them as towards me because it was directed towards me. Yeah.
Did you file any sort of complaint towards him?
No, I didn't. And looking back, I wish I did, but I think, I don't know, it's hard. As a male white teacher in a class where predominantly white students, I felt really outcasted, even though there was like a couple of Hmong students, but that day specifically with the pictures and the specifically directed towards me, I felt that white supremacy was being played and that the system really does take advantage of us minorities.
If you were to be in that position again, what would you do differently?
I would still be nervous, but I would stand up and call him out. That is racist. It makes me feel uncomfortable. It's a poor reflection on him and his class.
Yeah, but it can be hard to stand up to that person, especially someone in a position of power.
Cal, you also have an experience with a teacher making you feel uncomfortable in class or treating you differently.
Yes, that's true. I did have this one experience. So I took this AP class called AP United States History, and on that first day I entered the class, I didn't really dress the best, and I just kind of wore a sweater. My hair wasn't also that great either. The teacher told me to stay after class so that, you know, he wanted to talk to me about something. I kind of wondered what he was trying to say. Later after class, I went up to him, and he told me that the class may not be for me. And he asked me if it was okay for him to transfer me to a regular class. I was kind of appalled as to why he asked me such a question without even knowing who I was. Of course, I rejected his decision and told him that I wanted to remain in the class. I believe that this was a situation that happened due to the way I looked, especially when most of the class was white.
What that teacher said to you obviously made you feel unwelcome in the class.
Yes, these sorts of messages, sometimes ones that are unintentional, can make people of color or other minority groups feel like they don't belong.
Sometimes these are called microaggressions, and it can include everything from asking a person of color where you're really from or just even avoiding sitting next to them.
Holman High School student Chor Lohr says some of these cues can be hard to spot in the moment, but they leave a lasting impact.
I don't notice happening to me until, like, later on, like, I think about it. Or, like, if it's, like, the more noticeable racism, then, like, I would say, like, eye contact, because people can't, like, make eye contact with me. Like, do I have, like, a resting bee face or something? Do I have something on my face? Or it's just, like, microaggressions just kind of hit me, you know?
Can you tell me about experience at school that in a way like was like traumatic to you know? Like, have you ever experienced anything at school that like really has like hit you throughout your high school?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of triggered you or made you angry, made you mad?
Yeah, there would be like some kids, you know, like how people would generalize like the Asian kids as like the anime weebs or like the anime wannabes or like Korean wannabes. So like I know like the kids, the Mika kids would like try to synthesize with us like an anime and they'd be like, oh, I watch Goku, like I'm such like a weeb or something like that. But like it just like kind of like offends me in a way because like, okay, I know you're trying to agree with me, but then kind of like hurts me in a way because they would also like use the, these things or like they would be like, oh, you're trying to be Asian or something like that. I'm just kind of like, not every Asian person like watching this or doing these certain things, so you shouldn't be generalizing them in this category.
Yeah, and like sometimes, you know, like a lot of people like they do it on like purpose or just to joke around, but they don't know that like those things are like microaggressions and how they like can build up and like affect a person, you know.
Of course, like speaking up to them is kind of like, I don't know like how I would form to like say like, hey, like that kind of like hurts me even though you weren't talking to me. I don't know. But then, like, another situation was that I was at a college tour, and there's this white woman who made a racist remark on how there's a Chinese restaurant next to a pet store, and she said, oh, how conveniently how a Chinese restaurant's next to a pet store, because you know how there'd be a joke saying that, oh, Asian people eat cats and dogs, and mm-hmm. I think she made that remark just to be funny, which wasn't funny to us, and me and my friends felt very offended, and mm-hmm. even though the university college, like, apologized and everything, like, very quickly, I didn't feel the apology, like, mm-hmm. it wasn't from her, it was from them, like, they shouldn't be sorry, she should be sorry.
How does being Hmong, like, how is that special to you, and, like, when you come to school, like, is it hard, like, to be yourself?
Being Hmong isn't that hard, because, like, I do feel special, because it is, like, rare to find someone Hmong within this whole world. Like, it may be a small world, but, and I don't know, like, I just feel special, because I know this language that someone else doesn't know, and it's not very popular around here, too.
People who make racist jokes might not be trying to hurt someone's feelings. Often they're just trying to poke fun at an acquaintance or even friend, and it can be hard to stand up to someone who's not trying to attack you.
Homan High School student Gao Nu Vang shared her experience standing up to one of these friends, but she says that the most part, Hmong students at her school don't fight back when others make racist remarks.
In my school in general, I guess we, as students, we tend to just brush under the rug. We just kind of let it happen, and we don't want to do anything about it because we don't want to deal with it. I have seen racism around my school. They're mostly just jokes because, you know, people make racial comments and they just, like, quote-unquote joke around, you know, just, like, talking to each other and calling each other names and just saying all these racist comments that are assumed to be funny, you know, but it's like, when you go deeper into those comments, there's just so much more to it. I have a friend who would call me a chink because I was Asian, and they would just like joke around that, oh yeah, we're chinks, and then we'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, that's right, we are chinks because we are Asian, and chinks is associated with Asian people. And then it just got so annoying. I left it as it is for a while because I was just like, it's just a joke, I'm just gonna leave it alone for a while and see where it ends up going, because I want to think about it and I want to be able to deal with it in a much better way where I'm not just like calling him out and him not doing anything about it. I want him to learn something from what I want to tell him, so he would not call me a chink and he would stop using the word chink. And so, because I'm the president of Ujima, and Ujima is a Swahilian word for unity and coming together as one. It's a diversity club, and I'm the president of the diversity club, and he came to one of my meetings, and in that we had a discussion about racism and how to, like, deal with it and how to address it to when someone does a racist act upon you. And I called him out in front of the whole group, but I didn't say his name, so no one knows who he was, but he definitely knows who he was. I remember telling him, like, if I were to tell someone who called me a chink, I will tell this person that, you know, my ethnicity, my people, we did not grow to be called chinks, you know. We didn't fight in the secret war and to be called chinks by other people. We didn't risk our lives crossing the Mekong River, being into refugees and coming to America to try to live a good life for themselves and for their future children to be called chinks. That's not something that I want to be called in my lifetime, and I don't want anyone else to be called, because it's a name that is not me. Because I am not a chink, I am Hmong. And I remember telling him this, and I remember looking at him as I said it, and he just looked so defeated. I was like, oh. That's right. And that's how I called him out for it. And ever since that happened, he has not called me a chink ever since, and he has stopped using the racist words and slurs towards me and to other people. And I felt that it was a really good lesson that I have taught him not to do.
Racial stereotypes are thrown around casually,
but people overlook the real impact they can leave on others. Gao Nu found her voice and the power to confront her classmate, and other students of color should do the same.
Don't let people's judgment of you impact decisions about your future. And don't be afraid to speak up, whether defending yourself or someone around you.
Making people feel like they're not an outsider can go a long way towards building a safe and inclusive community.
We've been listening to an episode of Hmong Bays, a new podcast by a group of high school students working to build awareness and empowerment in the Hmong community. The group will be publishing their 5-episode podcast on Wisconsin Public Radio's website. I'm Hope Kerwin.
This program was originally produced for WPR's La Crosse-based regional talk show, Newsmakers. An archive of the show and details about Hmong Bays Project are available online at wpr.org/southwest. Coming up next week, we welcome Glenn Moberg to the guest chair, as he'll share his experiences covering the news for nearly half a century, favorite moments on Route 51, and his journey battling terminal cancer. We'll be taking your calls as well. Until then, we're heading out of town.